This is Angela Davis. You're listening to CKUT 90.3. Angela, you're one of a million of political prisoners in the world.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the CJP Me Debrief Podcast, a project of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East and a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network. Together, we discuss developments and issues in Canada's relationship with Palestine and the broader Middle East. Through our conversations, we make sense of events in the region and how people in Canada can respond. In the coming weeks, Canada is expected to vote at the United Nations General Assembly on a series of resolutions that would affirm Palestinian human rights. Over the past decade, Canada has voted no on almost all of these resolutions, aligning itself in a small minority with Israel and the United States. However, a recent CJPME report, based on documents obtained through an access to information request, finds that Canada's career foreign affairs officials are highly critical of Canada's staunchly pro-Israel record and have been pushing for a change in the government's approach. Today, we'll break down this report and discuss what its findings say about Canada and its reputation on the international stage. My name is Tom Woodley. I'm the president of CJPME and the podcast host for today. With me is Michael Buchert, CJPME's VP, and our podcast co-host. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Tom.
So not only are you our podcast co-host, you're also our podcast expert for today because you are actually the author of this amazing report that was issued just in the recent weeks. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, the title of the report is Voting Against Its Own Interests, right?
Yeah, so this report comes out of an access to information request. It's actually one that someone else had made a request into the government a while ago, and it had been sitting on the government website. The results of it, anyone can make a request to the government for access to, behind closed doors, sort of like emails between bureaucrats and sort of briefing notes and minutes from meetings and that kind of thing. To get a sense of what's really going on behind the scenes. And once someone makes a request and it's out there and public, anyone can go and find it. And so someone had made a request for these minutes, and they show, actually, we have maybe about 500 pages of internal documents from 2019. And this is a period when Canada was actually made a change in how it was voting at the United Nations. And this provides some information into the backroom conversations between foreign affairs officials in the government who are actually pushing the government to take a different approach.
Right. And it's actually quite interesting and elucidating, because for the most part, all the public sees is a vote and then a carefully curated what they call explanation of vote that countries like Canada will sometimes provide following a particular vote. So to see sort of the backroom discussions or the internal discussions is just fascinating. So this is really really quite an interesting find. Now, do we have any idea who actually made this Freedom of Information request?
No, but I'm very appreciative they did do that, because it can take quite a while for these actually to come out. And the government is actually notoriously bad at not jumping to these quickly. And sometimes you get them back with a lot of redacted material. They don't tell you what they black out significant portions of it. But yeah, this is a lot of really useful information that provides a lot of insight into what, you know, what people actually think in the government.
Right. Well, I guess it's possible to speculate that it might have been a pro-Israel organization that asked, that made the request, which actually resulted in these documents, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It could have been. They might have been upset. We haven't talked about what that vote was, what the content was yet, but there was a decision that the pro-Israel groups didn't like. They might have sort of put this request in to try to get some information, but it's really useful to us because actually, as we'll, you know, describe a little bit later, it actually reaffirms a lot of the arguments that we've been making to the government on these issues.
Absolutely. So with that foretaste of what's to come, why don't we give a little bit of background? You and I have done a number of podcasts talking about Canada and its voting at the United Nations. But let's just go over some of that just in case some of our audience have not heard those previous podcasts. So every year at the United Nations General Assembly, there are a series of resolutions on Palestinian human rights. How would you describe these resolutions, and how typically does Canada vote?
Yeah, so every year there's a series of sometimes it used to be 16 resolutions. In recent years, it's been reduced a little bit. It varies by year, but let's say about 10 resolutions per year. And they're on a whole bunch of different issues related to the question of Palestine. They have to do with self-determination for the Palestinian people. Some of the resolutions have to do with the rights of Palestine refugees and giving support to the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. Then you have resolutions that reaffirm the international consensus on issues like the status of Jerusalem and criticizing Israel's annexation of East Jerusalem. You have a resolution every year condemning Israel's settlements, which everyone in the world almost agrees are illegal under international law. And you have all of these different resolutions, all of them which are quite standard from our opinion. Well, not just our opinion, but just any objective analysis would see that these are in keeping with what the Canadian government actually thinks on these issues. If you go to the Canadian government's webpage, you know, their position on these issues is very much closely aligned. And yet, for some reason, over the past 10 years, over 10 years, Canada has been voting against all of them, almost all of them. This was a new shift because only 20 years ago, in the early 2000s, Canada was voting for most of them. And then the shift started to happen under Stephen Harper in 2006, started to kind of peel those back. And then in 2011, when Harper got a majority government, they made a decision to uniformly vote against them as a bloc. And that was maintained even when Justin Trudeau came to power. He maintained that pattern for a few years, and only in 2019 started to make a tiny change to that pattern. So even though Canada says it's against settlements, you know, it provides funding for refugees, but it's voting against these exact same positions at the UN General Assembly.
Right. And just for our audience who may not know, CJPME has what we call its UN dashboard. You can find it at cjpme.org/UN_dashboard, and we can put that in our show notes. And you can see the record of all this voting. As Michael described, you can go back 20 years, 22 years, and see the change in these votes. As Michael suggested a moment ago, there's a superset of 16 resolutions, but not all of them are voted every single year. And there's actually, to some degree, a process now to actually reduce the number even a little bit more. So it changes a little bit from year to year, but there's this sort of superset of 16 resolutions. The nice thing about, we'll be talking a little bit about the resolutions and the, you know, what was going on in Global Affairs Canada. What were the discussions in among Canada's diplomats to the UN and Global Affairs Canada? So we'll be talking a little bit about some of those internal discussions. And if people actually want to look at the resolutions, the actual text of the resolutions, you can use our UN dashboard and you can click on the cells there on a particular resolution for a particular year, and you can actually pull up the text of the resolution. So it's very useful in terms of when you hear Canada explaining its vote one way or another, you can actually look at the resolution and decide for yourself whether or not that makes sense. So really right. A great, great resource. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can also find out the overall breakdown of the vote, which across the board, Canada really is in a minority, extreme minority position. Most of these resolutions every year, let's say 140, 150 countries will vote for them, like on settlements. 150 countries vote to condemn Israel's settlements. Who votes against? Usually, maybe between 3 and 6 countries, the US, Israel, sometimes Australia, sometimes Hungary, Canada, and a few Pacific Island countries. And that's it. And so Canada really has marginalized itself on these votes. The votes really do represent the international consensus, and Canada has positioned itself outside of that.
Right, right. Now, you made reference earlier to a change in our voting pattern that occurred in 2019. We mentioned earlier that that might have been the trigger which led someone to make the freedom or access to information requests that we ultimately were able to look at for this report. So what actually happened in 2019, and does that really represent a real substantive shift?
Well, in 2019, Canada decided to change a single vote. So, you know, it had maintained for 3 years under Justin Trudeau. He was voting against all of these resolutions, same as Stephen Harper. In 2019, he changed a single vote. So for the motion on supporting Palestinian self-determination, Canada changed its vote from no to yes. So that was significant in a way. It was a break from the previous decade. And, you know, the government got a lot of backlash from pro-Israel groups who were very upset about it. However, it's one vote out of 16. it's on a resolution that Canada should never have been voting against in the first place, simply affirming the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. I don't think that resolution even criticizes Israel. There's just like nothing in it controversial whatsoever. And there's other resolutions like that, but this is the one that Canada decided is going to make a change. And then followed that up the subsequent 2 years. So basically has created a new status quo of voting against almost all resolutions with a token vote for one. So you don't want to minimize too much. It was significant in a sense that Canada did this change, but in the old grand picture, Canada is still 99% of the time standing with Israel against the rest of the world.
Right. And there's almost a philosophical, to your point, there's almost a philosophical angle to this, that by voting against 15 out of 16, it's very symbolic that Canada's are saying, well, no matter what, we're going to defend Israel, or we're going to provide diplomatic cover for Israel. And to your point, this one vote is a token vote. And, you know, it's just the very fact that Canada even would have voted against it anytime, even under Harper, is ridiculous, because, you know, if indeed Canada believes in a negotiated two-state solution, well, you know, surprise, surprise, a two-state solution is going to result in a self-determined Palestinian people, you know, with their own nation. So it's really just the very fact that the vote actually went to no and had to be switched back to yes, as you point out, is just ridiculous. So really not really a substantive shift. although significant, we'll say, but not substantive in terms of, you know, what it means for Canada's overall bias at the UN. Now, again, some of this stuff we have covered in previous podcasts, but it's good to go over some of this. So I talked earlier about sometimes how Canada, when they voted, not just Canada, all countries, often following the vote at these votes at the United Nations, they will often provide what they call an EOV, explanation of vote, to sort of justify why they vote for or against or what their thinking was. So how has Canada justified its pro-Israel voting policy in the past? And how does this compare with what government officials are saying behind the scenes in this access to information documentation that we received?
Well, there are a few different, ways that the government has tried to justify its position. You know, one of the lines of argument is that, oh, there's too many resolutions on, on Israel, criticizing Israel. And in a way, there are, you know, there are some resolutions. The fact that they come up every year, they don't, you know, it's too many. They say that this is singling out Israel, that it's not balanced, that it, you know, it's too much criticism of Israel, not enough criticism of the Palestinians. So, there's a few things immediately in there that we could sort of tear apart. One is the fact that the reason that these resolutions have come to the General Assembly is because they get vetoed at the UN Security Council, where actual decision-making power is held at the international stage, but also that the UN has a significant role in this situation, in advocating for the partition, in overseeing these bodies for Palestine refugees. There, you know, the UN has a role to play in this. And, you know, the idea that they're singling out Israel too is, you know, how else would you write a resolution on Israel settlements? How would you, like, who else is creating illegal settlements in this territory? It's only Israel, it's not the Palestinians. How would you write a balanced resolution that, where it's criticizing both sides? So, I mean, none of these arguments really make any sense. But at least, you know, as long as I've been following this, they've been saying the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a number of things you can say. You've touched on some of them. I mean, one of the things that has always bothered me is that they provide these explanations of vote, and there's really a whole lot that you could say to prove that these explanations are wrong or to argue against these explanations. And yet, nobody has the opportunity. So they're just sort of put out there as like these statements of fact, you know, something like there are too many resolutions. Well, you know, how do you assess how many is too many?
Right.
And well, Israel is also accused of violating human rights very frequently. So there's a certain correlation between countries that are violating a lot of the human rights or violating international law and the number of resolutions that are issued. But you're never, people like us, whether the nonprofit or even other political parties, you don't really have an opportunity to debate this. These explanations of vote are just put out there and they're presumably sort of, this is the way it is type of thing. And that's, I find that very frustrating. There's also this angle of sort of singling out Israel, as you mentioned. And one of the thing that bothers me, to my point a moment ago, you know, Israel is on a daily basis. There are new abuses of power, you know, people that are being shot at checkpoints, homes that are being demolished, settlements that are being built, illegal settlements that are being built. And these things are happening on a daily basis. So, you know, if Israel is tired of being accused at the UN, I think Israel's accusers are getting tired of having to accuse it. And if actually Israel would actually address some of these violations, then things actually might change. But because nothing changes, if anything, things get worse year after year, well, then I think it's the responsibility of the international community to continue to raise these issues. So there's really a lot to say on these things, but I think Canada's sort of public justifications really don't hold much weight.
Yeah, and I to your point about sort of like these positions they put out there, these explanations, they'll say something like it's not balanced, but they won't say what was wrong with it, right? There's no substantive critique to any of these. And in fact, if you look at, you know, there's an interesting thing that happens here where Canada says, it makes it sound like it's going, looking at these resolutions with, you know, with a pen, looking at it very closely, saying, okay, we can't, you know, this resolution we can support, this one we can't because of this, right? It's evaluating them based on their merits and their value and consistently with Canadian policy. But actually none of that happens because when Canada made this decision in 2011, it's going to vote against everything as a package. Canada put out a statement saying that, you know, they didn't like all these unbalanced, one-sided resolutions, they said. And so to express their discontent with the process, they're going to start voting against everything. So now that is the sole reason why they're voting against these. They're not looking at them one by one. They're not, evaluating them closely.
Yeah. Right.
They're not like, so even if one of these resolutions was rewritten, and they often, they actually, one another thing to mention, these are often go through significant consultation with European countries, with all sorts of countries, rewriting these to try to have as big of an appeal as possible. And so they do change in response to criticism to try to get a consensus. But even if they did, if these were rewritten somehow, it's completely tangential to what Canada is doing because Canada has decided no matter what, it's going to vote against them as a whole. And so it's just kind of ridiculous. And it's in contrast to what they say on their website, which is that they look at them one by one, but they don't. You know, the report, we haven't talked much about the findings, but actually the what we'll see is that, you know, these officials, people behind the scenes in the government, are describing Canada's policy very interestingly, noting that Canada doesn't look at them based on their merits, that it is only voting against them as a bloc, and that there are significant contradictions that this raises. So right. I don't know if it's time to get into that yet or not. But
yeah, well, yeah, I think so. I'll just make one final comment about, you know, I think you make an excellent point that the wording of the resolution does, these resolutions does change over time. They're generally right. So each year, it's a new resolution. It's not like a complete copy and paste, although there are similarities. And so every year, for instance, as you've mentioned, there's a resolution articulating that Israeli settlements are illegal and calling on member nations of the United Nations General Assembly to vote to affirm that these settlements are illegal. So there's every year there's a resolution on settlements, for instance. But I've actually met Riyad Mansour, who's the representative for Palestine at the United Nations. He's been there for quite some time. I think 2 decades he's been in the lead role there. And I've met him at conferences where he has explained that, yeah, they do go out to different countries and say, you have said that you don't feel that this is balanced or whatever it might be. And they ask, well, what type of wording should we incorporate such that this resolution might be more palatable to you? And so they do work very hard and these things do change. And so they do try to address that. But in fact, as you point out, Michael, if a country like Canada is just going to say, as a bloc, we're not going to vote for any of these, well, those types of wording changes are ultimately irrelevant. And Canada, basically, its explanation of vote is not an explanation of vote in good faith, because in fact they're not actually looking at them individually and evaluating them by merit. But I think it is time to get to the report. So as I mentioned earlier, it was just in September, so about a month ago, we issued the report entitled Voting Against Its Own Interest, based on Canada's voting. And Michael was the lead author, as I said, and did a lot of the core work on this. So Michael, what information did we get? And what's the significance?
Well, we get all of these documents from foreign affairs officials in the government working at Global Affairs Canada, working at in Canada's office at the United Nations, as well as, you know, staff specifically working on Israel-Palestine, you know, that file. And they're coming up with this memo to the government asking it to change its policy. And in doing so, they actually they're quite frank in describing Canada's policy. They talk about how this was changed, their Canada's policy was changed in 2011, that Canada's not evaluating motions based on their merits, but simply voting against them as a package, noting that this puts us that we're the only Western country in the world to do this, to side so closely with Israel and the U.S., and noting, in fact, that many of these resolutions at hand are actually consistent with the consensus in international law, that they reflect Canada's own values, interests, and standard of positions, and that when Canada's voting against these resolutions, in many cases, it's doing so despite their alignment with Canadian values, interests, and positions. So really brings to the fore the total hypocrisy and just like the total inconsistency with which Canada is voting against these things. It says it supports certain principles, but is voting against them. And, you know, we've been saying this forever, but we actually now see that foreign affairs officials, people in the government are saying, have the same critique. And so that's quite significant. And this, you know, one of these documents, again, is a memo that was brought forward. They were going to push the government to change its policy, and actually had been pushing since really Trudeau was elected shortly thereafter in 2016 for a different approach to start voting on resolutions based on their merit. And So I mean, one of the major criticisms that they expand upon is the fact that these things are consistent with what Canada says it believes in. But the other thing is noting that actually Canada's very staunchly pro-Israel approach has isolated it internationally, that it is damaging to its reputation. I think maybe these are different critiques we can sort of dive into a little bit more individually, but ultimately, this memo recommended had a few different options to the government. Ultimately, it ended up recommending that Canada change one vote as sort of a gesture, like a modest step forward. But in their analysis, they actually make a pretty compelling case for why Canada should be voting, for a lot of different resolutions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me go back just a minute in what you said, just again, to ensure that our audience is with us and all these things. So we talk about this term, this idea of merit, that the, you know, our Canada's votes based on the merit of the resolution. And so I just want to make sure our listeners, when we say Canada's position is this or Canada's position of that, you may wonder, well, I never heard Trudeau pronounce himself on this or pronounce himself on UNRWA or whatever it might be. So the actual, where does actually one find Canada's official position on these issues? Why don't you explain to our listeners a little bit how that works, Michael?
Well, Canada has a position that it puts on its website. There's a page on Canada's, you know, positions on, I think they call it the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, perhaps. And they have standard positions on settlements, on Jerusalem, on the wall, on all sorts of things that are sometimes updated slightly, but have more or less stayed consistent for decades. And these are positions that even if Canada is not speaking about it, right? Like, when was the last time Canada condemned Israel settlements? Like, they almost never do it, but it's on their website. It's something specifically that they, a position that they hold. And so when we're talking about merit, usually we're talking about, consistency with Canadian policy, whether these resolutions make sense, if Canada supports these things, but, you know, whether they have value, whether they're consistent with international law.
Right.
So, basically, again, like looking at them and saying, is this a good resolution? Is it a bad resolution? That would be a merit-based approach. Instead, they've taken the approach of just voting against all of them, regardless of what they say.
Right. Well, good or bad based on this webpage on the Global Affairs Canada website. I looked it up while you were talking. It's called Canadian Policy on Key Issues in the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. And they have about 10 or 12 different issues. Status of Jerusalem, Palestinian refugees, terrorism, Jewish refugees, support for the Palestinians, and so on. So they detail sort of what the government's official position on these things is. And as you say, this document or this page in some form or fashion has existed for years, decades, literally, as you say. And of course, much of these positions are also based on international law. So for the most part, much of what's in here is rooted in international law. So merit would be on the one hand, does the resolution have merit based on international law? And does the resolution have merit based on whether or not it aligns with Canada's sort of official policy as described on this webpage? And so, so it's important, you know, so when a resolution actually does have merit, so if a resolution is actually condemning Israel's illegal settlements, and that aligns with the official Canadian position on the Global Affairs Canada website, and it aligns with international law, then you would think that that would be a meritorious resolution that should receive Canada's vote. But in fact, for the past several years, it has not. Now, you actually mentioned that a number of, I guess there were two, the bureaucrats actually recommended two approaches. One was to sort of do a token change of vote, followed by other changes of vote a little bit later. And the other was just to change, I guess, or maybe was that I guess was the recommendation from Canada's diplomats at the UN, was it not?
Yeah. So again, the memo itself that ultimately went to the government recommended changing, at least for now, a single vote, but outlined a few different cases, different approaches Canada could take. And yeah, it was actually Canada's representatives at the UN in New York, as well as bureaucrats working specifically on issues related to the UN Security Council, who were actually pushing for Canada to go further and to change the recommendation to the government to be more along the lines of take a completely merit-based approach and you know, treat each resolution based on whether or not it has merit, it has value, it's consistent. Actually, you know, the memo had identified a number of resolutions which they said were most likely to change that or votes would change if we were to take that approach. I think there were at least seven.
Yeah, seven is what we said in the report. Right.
As ones were sort of most likely to, for that Canada would support them if it was actually looking at them closely. And two of them actually, they went so far because they were waiting so long to get a response from the government. How were they actually going to vote? They actually created two of these explanation of vote statements for one on for a motion on assistance to Palestine refugees and another for a motion on the Palestine refugees and sort of the property that they've lost and the need for restoration of that. And both of them, Canada, they created these statements saying, yes, like statements that they would have released if Canada voted for them. And they would have said, they say things like Canada's proud to support this and Canada's, this is consistent with Canada's support over the years. In the end, they never actually used those because Canada continued to vote against them. But it just shows you how maybe proactive people behind the scenes were in pushing and how much they realize that these votes, how little justification there is for Canada to every year vote against them. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, I guess there are a few things we should talk about here. I mean, on the one hand, CJPME, I mean, one of the very first things that we did when we were established as an organization, this was like 2005 or 2006, we were looking at these votes and we were saying exactly these things, that so many of these resolutions were meritorious, that Canada should support them, and yet Canada was not supporting all of them, and so, you know, on the one hand, this is something that we were talking about and sort of pushing for, and now to sort of in some ways be vindicated or to hear that, yeah, actually behind the scenes, Canada's career diplomats are sort of saying the same thing, and yet publicly the government won't admit that. That's one thing. Another thing that Michael and I were sort of talking about this before the podcast, I sometimes refer to these people as Canada's foreign affairs experts. And I guess what I mean by that, these are people whose careers have been dedicated to the study of international politics and foreign affairs. And the Canadian government pays these people for their expertise and to opine on these different things. So in as much as I consider them foreign policy or foreign affairs experts, that doesn't mean necessarily that they come up with all the right answers either, that they likewise can be influenced by politics. So in as much as we might call them Canada's foreign policy experts, sometimes sort of ape some of this language, some of this two sides language that we often hear, in certain circles, which really don't get to the core issues of human rights and international law and international justice. So I think I find it very interesting to finally, the curtain is rolled back and we're able to see what actually the discussions were behind the scenes. And in fact, these discussions parallel very much the discussions that we've been having in CJPME and among the broader Palestine Solidarity community. Now, another thing that I think was also interesting is that for years, CJPME and other organizations have been saying that these voting patterns on the part of the Canadian government are also impacting Canada's reputation on the international stage. And I guess, Michael, that was something else that was revealed in these memos to which we gained access. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of a discussion of the impact, there's for each of these sort of approaches that they were putting to the government, they kind of made like a pro and con list. And sort of a lot of the cons in terms of maintaining the reapproach was that was related to the fact that people didn't like what Canada was doing, that there's significant, criticism from UN member states, from, not just Palestinians and the Arab world, but also the G77 and China. So lots of developing countries, as well as Western countries, which says that they've actually voiced concern to Canada, that they don't see Canada as having objectivity on the file of Israel and Palestine because of Canada's pro-Israel voting record. And they mentioned the fact that Canada is the only Western country to vote in this way, and warning that the voting pattern has set us apart from like-minded countries. And so they just go on and on about this, really showing, I think, a concern that Canada, that people saw how Canada was voting and they didn't like it. And it's significant, too, that this memo, and all this discussion comes out in the midst of a campaign, because Canada is trying to get a seat on the UN Security Council, which was coming up for a vote the following year in 2020. And in the end, Canada actually lost that vote, and Ireland and Norway got seats, but Canada did not. And at the time, we were sort of saying, look, people see how we have this really unbalanced approach, or like very pro-Israel approach. This is likely why, or a reason why countries didn't vote for us. Now, this kind of gives further evidence for that perspective, because they were warning in the midst of a campaign, they're warning about how countries don't like what we're doing. And it was, these officials working on UN issues that were most keen to push for a totally different approach. So I think it's really interesting to see kind of like this detail that really, again, continues to bolster a lot of the positions that we were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It is fascinating. And, it truly is an upset when Canada is beaten out by countries like Ireland and Norway. Canada has close to 40 million people. I think Ireland has 5 or 6 million, Norway about the same. And Canada had not been on the Security Council for quite a while. This was the second attempt that Canada had made to get onto the Security Council, and they failed. And one of the things, sort of one of my pet peeves is, when both these past two times when Canada's bid for a Security Council seat failed, you see these op-eds in the mainstream media. I get the Globe and Mail, for instance, and people will talk about, Canada lost, didn't succeed in its bid for a Security Council seat. And very rarely do they even mention the fact that Canada's voting is so unbalanced on this. And yet, again, when you roll back the curtain and you see what people are saying internally, and they admit that this voting, that the voting's on these resolutions, is specifically tarnishing Canada's international reputation and impacting its ability to play a bigger role. It's just so, I think, not rewarding, but so vindicating, or so satisfying to see them admit in the back rooms that indeed this is what's happening. It's really a damning statement on Canada's voting pattern, of course, first under Harper, now continuing almost unchanged under Trudeau.
And I think it's important to remember that it's not just a few foreign affairs officials, right, who are talking about this. These documents show that there is dialogue between all of these different departments at all these different levels. They're having this back and forth sort of conversation, but not debating these points, right? Not debating the rationale in the report or the analysis about Canada's voting, that there seems to be this widespread consensus almost within the government, not at the elected level, but everywhere else, that Canada's pro-Israel position, it's inconsistent and it's harming how the world views us. So I think that is really interesting. On a lot of issues, we often talk about sort of evidence-based policy on like the environment or all sorts of things. Sometimes I like to think of foreign affairs in a similar way. Canada will ignore all of the human rights groups and say, I disagree, totally ignore the evidence. Similar here, it's ignoring all of their public officials, all of the experts that they pay to work on these files, and completely ignoring them, essentially. Like, even though Canada did make this single change in 2019, these criticisms in this memo still stand for all of these other resolutions. And Canada is still voting against these resolutions that, they had drafts for, saying that they would have voted for them. So I think it just shows how, like, it's not clear who they're listening to on this, but they're not listening to experts either on the ground or in their own public service. And yeah, I hope that this report is read by the government, by Liberal MPs, to see that, the line that they push on their policy, that no one is buying it, nowhere.
Right. Well, and what you're describing is sort of a situation where, let's say you have a CEO of a company and he invites his, chief operating officer and his chief financial officer to come back to him or her with a recommendation, and they come back with a recommendation, and then the CEO just ignores that and does something entirely different. So these are the people that are paid to provide the best, in their opinion, the best possible guidance for Canada in its diplomatic work. And yet the elected officials entirely ignore that and take their own approach, which, of course, leaves Canada very much open to criticism and which takes away from Canada's international reputation. So it really is upsetting and disappointing. Now, we've published this report, and we've gotten some good feedback from it. I think people have taken notice. I don't think anyone would have been made aware of this if we had not come across this and published this report. And I guess there are a few signs and sounds that maybe some people are pushing for change as a result of this. Do you want to go through some of the different people and parties and groups that have sort of called for a review of Canada's voting at the UN on these resolutions?
Yeah, there are, members of parliament from multiple parties, including within the Liberal Party, who are openly calling on the government to change its approach at the United Nations and to start voting in favor of resolutions on Palestinian human rights. And so, some of those MPs include, Chandra Arya has been talking about this for a while, as well as, Salma Zayed, who is also the chair of the Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Friendship Group.
And both of them being Liberals, of course.
Yeah, both of them Liberals. And Salma Zayed, she said in a statement that members of this Canada-Palestine group are going to be writing letters to the government, asking them to change their approach and to start supporting Palestinian human rights, which is very interesting. We also know that the NDP has put it into their policy, or they've been maybe not on their website, but in a communication to supporters. Jagmeet Singh has been talking about how the NDP is pushing the Liberal government to vote for resolutions on Palestinian human rights, which is really great. And we've also seen members of the Bloc Québécois, in fact, the foreign affairs critic, Stéphane Bergeron, in committee was sort of grilling Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly about this late last year, asking her, why would Canada be voting against this resolution? And I think he was talking about the one on settlements when, you know, all the things in this resolution Canada says it agrees with. Yeah. So I think there is quite a diverse a body of parliamentarians who see the problems with Canada's approach and want it to change. Unfortunately, whenever there's a discussion about this in Parliament, those are never the voices we hear. It's always conservative voices challenging the government. Why would you vote for even one motion on right. Palestine? How, seeing this as like a betrayal to Israel somehow.
Right.
And that's the only debate that we'll get. And you will rarely even get a very strong defense from the Liberal government, even on that. So it's very, it's really shameful. I think, you know, it's good that some people are speaking out, but they need to speak out in Parliament. They need to be part of the debate. They need to be more open about it. I think there needs to be some actual pressure and highlighting some of these very real critiques.
Yeah, yeah, so true. And that's, you know, you make a good point about sort of what the lacking in the level of debate in Parliament, that, as you say, conservatives may criticize the government for this one vote in support of Palestinian self-determination. And even in its defense, the government, you know, conservatives attack it, sort of saying you've betrayed in some way Israel. The government doesn't, you know, sort of responds to that in a similar sort of manner. They don't talk about human rights. They don't talk about standing up for international law. They just sort of say things like, well, we're a steadfast ally to Israel. And there's no real discussion of the substance of what's in these resolutions and so on. And so, right, it would be so refreshing actually if within the parliamentary debate that people actually talking about what these resolutions actually say and what a merit-based response actually would be to these resolutions. So there are some encouraging voices. As you say, there are some people within the Canada-Palestine Parliamentary Friendship Association, which are, you know, talking about this and trying to elevate this issue. And fortunately, the NDP and Bloc have brought this up to some degree as a party, which is interesting. But really much more needs to be done. And you know, from my perspective, it's such a no-brainer. These resolutions, they're aligned with international law. They're aligned with Canadian policy. I don't see why there even needs to be any sort of debate around this. Canada should be supporting these resolutions. Is there anything else that we need to say about our findings, about what was revealed, about what Canadians should know about sort of, you know, how the Trudeau government is actually ignoring the advice of its paid experts? Anything else we should mention?
Well, maybe it's just worth going out a little bit further too, and just reminding people that sort of this voting pattern is maybe the most visible aspect, but Canada's, I guess, approach internationally is just so pro-Israel. I think a lot of people still kind of think of Canada as sort of being a neutral or like middle player, or sort of being balanced, or in some way, you know, standing up for human rights, no matter where in the world it's taking place. But Canada is one of the most pro-Israel and most hostile to Palestinians countries right now on the world stage. And it's not just sort of Canada's, you know, unjustifiable voting at the UN. This is probably, in terms of like consequences, like, you know, concrete consequences, this is more of a symbol. It's an important symbol, but there are other things that are even worse. Canada's has opposed Palestine's bid to the International Criminal Court. seeking an investigation of war crimes. Canada is opposed to that investigation. Canada is opposed to the UN Commission of Inquiry that was founded by the UN Human Rights Council to investigate, again, breaches of international law and human rights violations. Canada is opposed to even Palestine having a seat, even a non-member seat or observer seat at the UN. So Canada really is an outlier on the international stage. And yeah, the voting isn't even the most important thing or the most important problem, but it's an important symbol that Canada is choosing on something that has so little, there's so little justification for at all. And yet Canada is willing to step out of line, out of the consensus with the rest of the world to say, we're not even going to allow a basic criticism of something that we claim to believe in terms of, you know, something on settlements. It's just, something needs to change. I think people around the world see it, but I think more Canadians need to see what Canada is doing.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point, that these 16 resolutions are to some degree a visible and outward symbol of Canada's diplomatic stance. But in fact, Canada's diplomatic cover, internationally goes way beyond these resolutions. And many of the other things that Canada is doing are far more pernicious or far more harmful to the well-being and to the rights of the Palestinians than these sort of more symbolic resolutions. So I guess, should we call it a wrap there, Michael?
Yeah, I think that's enough from us, but anyone can read this report on our website, cjpme.org, and we'll put a link to the report in the show notes for this episode. And if anyone has feedback, you know, I've actually heard from a few different people who are involved in the diplomatic world for Canada in the past, and they said that these findings don't surprise them. It's consistent with, you know, their own experience. So it's clear that it's exposing something that's true about the way that, you know, Canada's outward position on the issues is so detached from what actually is happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, good point. Well, we'll leave it at that. If you're a listener, if you enjoyed our podcast today, please subscribe to our channel. We're on all the major audio podcast platforms. If you can, please leave a positive review wherever you get your podcast. It helps other people to find our program and to learn about the issues. This podcast is a project of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, CJPME, and seeks to advance its mission to empower Canadians of all backgrounds to promote justice, development, and peace in the Middle East. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, as Michael just said, about our podcast or our other topics, please feel free to email us at info@cjpme.org. Thanks to all our supporters who helped to make this podcast and all of CJPME's other activities possible. Thanks also to Madeleine Moffitt, our podcast engineer and consultant. So that's it for now. We'll look forward to having all of you with us for our next podcast. Take care, and we'll see you all again soon.
So that's it for us for today. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
This is Kai Kello, and you, Kai Kello, and you are tuned into CKUT. CCCKKKKUUTTTCCCKKKUUTTTCCKKKKUUTTT 90.3.